ready for the interview. In a few, get a cue live on a laptop. Watch what I'm gonna do. Welcome to the show. Let them know we got a point of view. Hey, yo, let's have a combo. Say what you feel, be real. That's the motto. Real talk, pronto. Dr. D, PhD, hit an intro. Hold up, wait. Gotta be social, network, global, a home for the locals. Gotta be social, network, global, a home for the locals.
All right, Dre, thank you so much for being with me here on Dr. D's Social Network. Now, we were just talking offline about the very unique video you sent me, reaching out. I'm curious, how did you come up with something like that? It feels very unique.
Man, just always looking for ways that I can do things that don't scale, Darren. You know, just what can I do that the other people in my space are not doing? I'm sure you yourself as a podcast host, you probably get those copy-pasted emails all the time. You know, I get them and I don't even have guests. I don't have guests on any show. I get the emails, so I know you get them. So I said, what can I do that other people are not going to do that takes some actual time, a little bit of investment of time? And that was it.
Yeah, it was. It's funny, when I received it, I honestly, because you're so kind of socialized into the normal pitches and stuff, and I'm thinking, oh, this is probably a very generic pitch. And then when you had said my name, and it was, I said, whoa, that's pretty cool. And honestly, it resonated with me. So I thought that was really clever to do. And I'd love to know how, like you said, doing different things, how that's worked in other parts of your life, and especially with work on your game.
Great question. So when I first was trying to get on playing ball, my background's in basketball, play professional sports. I came out of a Division III college, which doesn't really produce pro players. So I need to find an agent who could help me connect with pro teams, because the teams weren't looking for me, but they might know the agent. The agent might help me get on. So when I went to my first exposure camp, it was like a job fair for athletes. I had good footage and I had a good scouting report. So I started cold calling basketball agents. I actually cold called like 60 agents before I got my first job playing pro ball. And I was pitching myself to them. Usually it's the other way around.
Right.
They pitch to you, but I was pitching to them to try to get one of them to represent me. And I got one to represent me. And that's how I got my career started. So had it not been for that, I probably would not have had a career as a professional athlete, because again, they weren't looking for me. I had to go look for them. So that's something that I've always tried to do, is figure out what can I do that other people are not going to do that is actually going to make me stand out in the game, that separates me from others.
Where does that come from? Like, what's the genesis of that? Like, when did you start realizing I need to do this in order to get to, you know, this point and the next point?
That's a good question. I think it probably comes from, I think it comes from sports. It's rooted in sports, because I started playing ball really late. I started playing when I was 14. So most kids who are going to play a sport, they're into it when they're 7 or 8 years old, right? I just didn't get into it till I was 14. So I was trying to catch up to the other players in my neighborhood, my peers, and they had been playing for years. So they were all better than me at 14, 15, maybe even going into 16. So I said, what can I do that they're not doing that will allow me to catch up? So I realized I couldn't just come to the park at 5 in the evening when everybody else came to the park, because then, you know, in my 15-year-old mind, 14-year-old mind, theoretically, we're all getting better at the same pace because we're all spending the same amount of time on the court. So I realized that in the summer, now I'm from Philadelphia, in the summertime, in the middle of the day, like 12 o'clock, it's too hot for anybody to be outside, or to them, it was too hot. So I said, let me use that time, because I would go past the court and I see it was empty. Nobody was out there because it was so hot. I might use that time to practice so I can get better. Then I'll still come out in the evening and play with everybody else. So now I got extra time going in. So now that extra time will allow me to kind of close the gap to these kids who are all better than me. And it actually worked over time. That did actually work. It closed the gap. Yeah. And eventually I tied them, and then I started to pass them. So when I saw it worked in sports, I applied it to everything else.
I want to dig deeper on this, because I'm very much into this strategy. It's a big thing for myself. But do you think this was something that was just in you, or did someone influence you to think this way?
If there was someone who influenced me, I wouldn't know who. It might have been something subconscious that I don't even consciously think about. But I think just going back to the discipline of it all overall, I would just have to give credit to my parents. You know, they instilled discipline in my sister and I. You know, do your homework, you know, do your chores on weekends, that kind of stuff. Not for sports, but the discipline of just showing up and continuing to work, I think that played a role in what I ended up doing in sports. But even though my parents were not sports focused.
Yeah. I had a similar upbringing. My parents were very much in the discipline and being on time and lots of like the little things you do that create large improvements in life. So I think that's, there's something there with that. So how do you teach this to other people with work on your game? Or tell me a little bit of kind of that, plus how this started to form what you're doing, this entrepreneurship with this.
Yeah, absolutely. We do teach that to other people. And we, what we do is help people put the structure in place so that the discipline happens naturally. So just like we both talked about here, Darian, having parents around who were about discipline is the structure. So when you follow what they say, the structure, the discipline naturally is a byproduct of it. So the same thing I help entrepreneurs do is put a structure in place so that the disciplines that they want to have that they may not be able to force feed upon themselves. Most people try that and it doesn't work.
Right.
The discipline naturally happens because you have a structure. That's the reason why structure matters so much. And you look at any aspects of life that are highly structured, you notice that the people are disciplined because they have no choice but to be disciplined because it's just following the structure. So what was your other question? How did this all come to be?
Yeah. So how did you start kind of taking this and melding this into work on your game and building? Because you were one of the, one of the early people on YouTube, right? You were working way back in the day on this, these platforms and things. Tell me a little bit how that started to percolate, grow for you.
Sure. So as far as athletes, you know, putting training material on YouTube, I was the first. There was nobody putting training material out online before I started doing this. Plenty of people doing it now. But where it came from, the whole work on your game thing came from, I was putting basketball content online for like 5 years. So from 05 to about 2010, all my content was just basketball related because I was playing at the time professionally and I was just making videos. I was working out every day. So I just recorded my workouts and I would just take little clips and put them on YouTube. That's all I was doing. And about 2009, 2010, the players, a couple things happened. First of all, the players started asking me questions about my approach because they saw I was really consistent. This is way before it was cool to be consistently putting content online. And they would ask about, you know, performance anxiety. How do you get the confidence to perform in a game? Or you got cut from your high school team, Dre. Hey, I just got cut from my high school team. So what, can you give me some reason to keep going? Why should I keep trying? Or how do you get started playing ball overseas? Or how do you get started getting known online? Because now at that point, it was starting to become a thing to actually put content online. I've been doing it for years. So people were actually growing up wanting to be YouTubers and not, you know, firefighters, right? So that was starting to be a thing. So also what happened is employed from basketball. I was a pro player, but I didn't have a contract. So I'm like, I need to figure out what's something I can do that I can have control over it. I can control the money, where the money's coming in, and I don't have to wait for somebody to approve of me. Because when you're a pro athlete, you still got to get signed. Somebody has to sign you. Like, you don't just make money just because you can play. So both of those things happened at the same time. And, you know, I had this growing audience, but I didn't know what to do with that audience. So that's when I started looking around for ways to create my own products and services. I followed some experiments that some people had online. Tim Ferriss, a 4-Hour Workweek guy, he had an experiment that I followed just to come up with a product idea and test it out, see if it worked. I followed his experiment and I started making my own products. So my first product was a $4 training program for basketball players. And from there, I was already writing. I'd always been a blogger, but my blog never like took off. But I had a blog while I was still putting videos up on YouTube. I started combining all this stuff. So it was the writing, it was the playing basketball, it was the creating and selling products, and it was doing it all online and kind of making this entity of this brand that we now call having a personal brand. That was becoming a thing around that 2009, 2010 period. And I started focusing on that because, again, at this time, I'm unemployed, so I had nothing else to do. So I just started focusing on that, and that's how I started to build this brand. And also, YouTube started offering ads at this point because there was a time, people don't remember, you used to be able to watch you all day with no ads. All right, that time's over, but back then, there were no ads. They started doing ads, and you can make money, more videos were put out. So all of that happened all at the same time, and self-publishing happened at this time. So this is when I started books. So all in this little 2-3 year time period, all of this stuff happened at the same time. So that brand came from.
And that's amazing. I mean, you were essentially an early adopter and maximized something that has become gigantic today. So it makes me wonder, based off of you doing this so early, what are the lessons you've learned about personal branding from then in 2005 to now? What are the biggest things that jump out to you?
Biggest thing with personal branding is you got to have a personality. And this is something that I say to, I say to entrepreneurs all the time. Like, you can't be boring. Right? Whatever your thing is, you got to do that thing. And when I say don't be boring, it doesn't mean you need to be jumping up and down doing dances. I don't do that. But whatever people expect from you, you have to give it to them. Like, they have to buy into your personality in some way, shape, or form. Like, you got to have a form. Like, people have to know what they're getting when they come to you. So if you were to ask one of your biggest fans, what would they tell their friend about you? Without seeing you, how would they describe you? And you need to know how you're being described by the people who are most in on you. And you need to represent that if that's what you be. So, and you could easily just ask your fans. So I ask my clients, like, what is it about what I bring to the table that makes it unique and different and is often different than what you think it is? Mm. And when you get clear on what that is and you know what that is, then that's what you need to be bringing to the table. Number one thing, personal branding, you have to have a personality, you have to have a form. So where people can identify your work from other people's work and is not your quote unquote area of expertise, because there's probably 1,000 other people talking about that same thing, but your approach to it is what makes it unique.
Interesting. I love the personality part. I don't think people think about that enough, that you have to have, it can't be just boring and droning on, but you have to bring some pizzazz, charisma to whatever, whatever, I like you to say whatever that is, because everybody has different things that you're into. What's your current ideas, thoughts about the current climate of personal branding in today's, do you feel like it's oversaturated, or there's now we're at like a point where there's so many people online trying to make space? How do you differentiate yourself when you're, besides just what you said, personality, when there is so much saturation in the space?
Yeah. So as far as it being oversaturated, I'm not sure we can say that, Darian, simply because, I mean, at what point is it full? I mean, I don't think there's a point. So I think everybody at some point is going to have some form of, I mean, on a logical level, everybody has a personal brand. It's just how people think of you. Mm. But when we talk about getting on the internet and kind of putting your name out there and stuff, there's only going to be more and more people doing it. Because as I said, around 2009, 2010, stopped growing up wanting to be policemen and firefighters, and now they want to be YouTubers. So 10 years from now, there's going to be way more people doing it, right? Because the kids born today, that's all they're going to know. That's all they're going to know is get on the internet. And this is like the goal. If they can make that happen, they'll do this. Same way we would grow up and say, hey, if I could become a, you know, a football player, great. Now, if it doesn't work, but now this people are going to be this.
Yeah.
I think figure out where you got to get in, fit in. That's the biggest thing, is you and what makes you amongst everyone else out there. Because again, for almost all of us, none of us is the only one talking about, or the only one thing. It's only a matter of time other people see it and start copying you. So what's going to make you different from everybody else? So you have to figure out what that is. And it's usually something about your person and your approach to the work. And again, that's the thing that will separate you no matter how many people come in.
What do you talk about with people who, like you mentioned about, this is kind of people's, be a foot professional athlete, they want to be a YouTuber, this diff, they would be a firefighter. But what about doing all these things and not becoming a personal brand? Like, a lot of people want to be professional athletes, very few people accomplish it. A lot of people may want to be YouTubers, like really big, but that actually may not be what is in their plan. How can they utilize work on your game, and not actually, maybe it doesn't work out in that area of personal branding online? How do you shift people in those ways? Because not everybody's going to make it in that sense.
Right. Yeah. So, well, the first thing I would say, as opposed to being a pro athlete, is that being a brand online doesn't have a cap, right? So in professional sports, let's say you play team sports, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, there's a hard limit on how many people can be on the team. Right. So you know exactly how many people can be in the game. Whereas being a YouTuber, there's no limit on how many people can start a YouTube channel. Like, everybody can start one. Now, where it goes is a different question. Now, let's just say somebody tries one and it doesn't work out. They decided, all right, this is not working, I'm going to do something else. One of the keys is you got to be able to extract from your experiences the value that you can take with you. You want to make sure that time, something. So I played sports. I don't play sports anymore. But I can still take the things that I learned as an athlete and apply them to you don't want a whole section of your life to mean absolutely nothing. It's almost like dead time. And now you're even further behind the eight ball to other people who've been in this other space that you just stepped into. They've been in it 10 years. You just got here last week. You're way behind them. But if you can take something from that last 10 years that you were doing something else and apply it to this now, not only do you you kind of catch up to them, but you also make yourself unique because you have a different approach from what they're doing. So when I look at other entrepreneurs, the people who have been in entrepreneurship all the way through since, let's say they're my same age, but they've been in entrepreneurship 20 years straight, but I was playing ball, then I got in entrepreneurship. How do I compete with them? I'm not going to compete with them on my longer entrepreneurial resume because it's not longer, but I can take what I learned in sports and it makes me different. It creates a complete different approach. So the biggest thing for everybody is you have to be able to look through your experiences and extract the value. What can someone else learn or benefit? How can someone else benefit from the experience that you had? And this is just simply just looking at your situations and asking yourself, all right, what did I learn here? What did I get out of this? Even the stuff that didn't work. I mean, a couple of things I've told you right here so far in this conversation, the things that didn't work for me, but they actually led me to being who I was. Because had my career been going perfect and I was always signed to a contract and never a free agent waiting on the phone to ring, I probably would not have started building what became Work On Your Game, at least not as early as I did. But it was that time when nothing was happening in the other space that I started making something happen in this space. So it's just being able to, I guess we call that being an opportunist, all right, finding the opportunity in every situation.
Most definitely. I totally believe in that. I would love to learn about your journey, like that time as a professional athlete and all the different countries you went through, how that maybe shaped and molded this mindset as well. How that assisted in your mindset.
Sure. So first, I played in 8 different countries over the course of 9 years. And how that really helped me was, well, the first thing is, I mean, you get to travel the world, you play a game, literally a game for a living, and they're paying for the whole thing. So there's no better job than that. I always tell people being a professional athlete is a much better job than being an entrepreneur. There's a lot less work. All right. A lot less work. There's not as many people you got to worry about. And for the most part, everything is structured for you. And this is something that a lot of athletes don't think about. Everything's structured for you when you're an athlete. All you got to do is show up and play. All right. You don't have to sell tickets. You don't have to go get the customers. You don't have to service the customers. You don't respond to the emails. All you do is show up and play. That's all you do. When you're an entrepreneur, you got to do everything, right?
That's right.
Entrepreneur, you got to sell the tickets. You got to talk to the customers. You got to deal with the refunds. You got to do everything. So it's a completely different job. And as far as being an athlete, of course, you get to deal with different types of people. And when you're playing a team sport, you learn about group dynamics. So the same stuff that you need in the corporate world, for example, or if you're running a small business, leadership, teamwork, interconnectivity, working with different types of personalities, dealing with conflict. You got to deal with all of that in a team sport on a football team, same way you got to deal with it when you're working in a small business with 10 employees. It's the exact same things. And also you got the performance culture. In the business world, there's a performance culture. And in the sports world, there's a performance culture. You must perform and you got to produce results. And if you don't, then heads start rolling. All right, people start losing their jobs. People end up out of careers. So there are many parallels between what happens in the sports world and what happens in the business world. There are many differences as well. But those parallels, a lot of that I still take now to what I do. And being a professional athlete, again, being that fewer than 1% of people ever get that chance, when you have had it and you can articulate how something you learned there can be valuable for people who don't do it, it again puts you in a completely different space than your would-be competitors, simply because you're, again, different, not better, but different.
Right.
And it's much important to be different than it is to be better. It's hard to prove that you're better than somebody.
That's true. I like the way you said that. That's interesting. Let's dive in a little bit to maybe the ethics and entrepreneurship and personal branding. This is an interesting aspect of how do you advise people, talk to people about guess someone say be true to yourself or having kind of a line of something you won't cross when you're trying to promote yourself. Because I think sometimes this can be an issue for people individually is, well, if this is going to make me quote unquote popular, what line will I or not line will I cross or not cross to do this in my personal brand? What advice would you give on that?
I'd say, first of all, you have to have that line. You need to know what your lines are.
That's right.
Right. That's the first thing. You got to have some lines. And I say, and where you're saying ethics, I equate that to principles. We're talking about the same thing. Yes. They're parallel. So principles, don't change. Your principles are your hard lines that do not change. They are unshakable. They are just etched in stone. Those are the principles. And from your principles, you devise your strategies, which are your game plans, your plans of action. And from there, you get your tactics. Those are just the things you do moment by moment, day by day. Tactics change all the time.
Yeah.
Strategies change slowly. Principles change never. And what I've found is in our world, just in general, and this is not new, it's maybe more obvious because we can see everybody these days through our phones. Whereas back in the day, you can only see who you actually physically saw. Is that a lot of people don't have any principles, Darren. Mm. That's what I think. Many people just have no principles. And not in a negative way. They just have never sat down and thought, what am I about? What am I not about? What is acceptable? What is not acceptable? And if you're not clear on that, then it's going to be hard to make decisions. That's the good thing about ethics and principles. Again, we're using those interchangeably, is that when you have clear principles, it's easy to make a lot of decisions because all you have to do is look at your principles and say, okay, is this above the line or below the line? And it's a black and white answer. Right. All right. There's no, you don't need a committee, right? It's just, this is what it is. And when you don't have those, and you could apply this to business as well.
Sure.
When you don't have those, it's hard to make decisions because you're like, all right, is this okay? It's kind of close. I'm not sure. And this is why people need to sit down and think, what are you about? What are you really about? And what are you not about? And you know, who do you want to serve? How do you want to serve them? What kind of people do you want to attract? And these things, when people don't sit down and think about these things, again, they can end up way over a line that maybe later on they decide this is the line, but then they look like, damn, I'm already past that line. Right? Yeah. I already crossed it. So now what do I do? So that's what I see that.
That's a great answer, man. I mean, I think that encompasses a lot of what I've been thinking about. And I was like, because I just had a conversation about this with some buddies of mine. And I was like, you know, you have like, and we'll use a very just general term, the thing you have inside you that says, I should or shouldn't do this, this ethos that you have. Mm-hmm. It's like, feels like that there's a large segment of people who just don't have that. And equating that with the principles. Now, my question is, why do we not see that as much today? What's your kind of answer for that?
Great question. A few things. Number one, just as with people in general, I think as far as having, how do I want to say this? Let's just say at home, family units aren't what they were traditionally. Mm-hmm. All right. There was a time, this is even before my time, that it was almost taboo if there were kids, but the parents weren't together.
Right.
Or there wasn't two parents at home. Now that's almost like normal. Now people almost expect you to be a single parent. You tell me, you mentioned your mom, they expect that there was no dad. Like that's almost become a normal thing, that we don't have the same units that we had then. I think people, as far as religions, I don't claim any religion, but people aren't that's not as ingrained in society as it has been. There's also I believe there's a big attack on just what is objectively true and what's not true. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people, for whatever reason, you could be entire books written on this, that people are attacking what is true versus what's not true, and those lines are being bent. And these are people who are very smart and they're very good with words, and they can manipulate with words in ways that it's hard to combat them. I think a lot of that is happening in society these days for myriad reasons, and it's leading a lot of people to confusion. That's what it's leading to a lot of confusion. And there's a law in science called the law of entropy, which states that any entity left to its own devices eventually moves into a higher level of disorder. And the only reason that happened, and everybody deals with entropy, it's kind of like if you don't brush your teeth for a week, then your teeth get in worse shape. Mm-hmm. If you don't work out, you get fatter and out of shape. If you don't clean your house, then it gets dirty, right? Anything that you don't consistently tend to is going to get worse. If you don't pull the weeds out of your garden, then the weeds take over your garden and destroy all your flowers. Just a natural thing that occurs. If you leave something by itself, it gets worse. That's just how it works. And what keeps things from getting worse is having parameters and standards and guardrails around things. Having a structure. This is what I'm about. This is what I'm not about. This is okay. This is not okay. So just like you talked about the ethics, when you remove those, you don't even have to do anything bad. If you just remove them and do nothing, things get worse. That's just the natural state. That's a scientific law.
Yeah.
Things get worse when you remove barriers and you just leave things as they are. This is how it works. So it's like you see an abandoned building with a yard out front. If nobody does anything to it, the building just gets broken down, and you get rats in there, and the grass grows, and there's weeds all over the place, and there's graffiti on it. It just naturally happens. Yep. It's just human nature, and it's science. So that's what's happened. I think that a lot of ethics and structures and principles have just been removed. And if you just do that alone, you don't have to do anything bad and things just get worse by themselves.
That's a hell of an answer, man. I got to tell you, man, you've thought about this a lot. I can tell you really
yes, I have.
Have a great understanding. I've thought about this so much too. We have so much synchronicity on this topic. I really feel. How do we get that back? What's a way to move back towards this?
Man, well, there are two ways that could happen. Okay. So there's a hard way and an easy way.
Okay.
All right. So I want you to say the easy way. There's a hard way and there's a more structured way. Let's put it that way. The structured way is it starts with one person. It starts with one, then the next, and the next. And it can become kind of a grassroots thing, for lack of a better term, is that people have to decide, okay, we need to put structures in place. We need to put parameters. We need to have ethics. We need to have principles. And as one person does it, no, each one teach one. All right, so I'm doing it. Now Darian's going to do it. Now you're going to tell your friend. I'm going to tell my friend. We tell three people. They tell three people. And slowly society changes because it starts with a few people deciding we're going to be intentional and conscious about this. And slowly it grows that way. And slowly we root out all the stuff that isn't working and we bring in more of the stuff that is working. It could work like that, but that happens very slowly. It happens very gradually and it takes time. And that could take decades for that to occur, honestly. The hard way is that we're going to face disaster. And I think as a society, that is usually what gets people's attention because most people don't have the patience or the diligence or the discipline for a slow, long process. Like that slow grind. Most people have a discipline for a slow grind. Like they want the quick thing. All right, that's all we got. Instagram, right? It's not slow gram. It's Instagram, right? They want something immediate, right?
Slow gram,
right? People want something right now. They want it fast, right?
Yes,
swipe left, swipe right, right? People want something quick. Now they don't want to wait. They don't have discipline for that. So what it was going to have to happen for most people to get it is they're going to have to face disaster. Something's going to have to happen. America might get invaded. Who knows? We might go to war. We may have another recession that's worse than the last one. Something's got to happen. It's going to really wake people up that even when they're trying to ignore it, they can't ignore it. And that's not going to be some slow, listen to a podcast. Like most people need to hear it, ain't listening, right?
Yeah,
it's only the people who are serious about this are listening to this conversation.
That's
but the people
totally
who really
true.
Need to hear it, they ain't listening, right? So you got to slap them in the face with something that they can't ignore. And that usually has to be something that is like jarring to them. And that is often what has to happen in order for a real change to occur. So I think it can happen quickly, but it will hurt before it feels good. Let's put it that way.
I actually have been, we're speaking the same language in my business and fitness. And I do a lot of speaking at conferences and we talk a lot about the biological and anthropological beginnings of exercise. And people ask me, how do you get a lot of people to like turn this tide from 10 to 15% of people exercising regularly in the United States and frankly, the world? I said, something you're probably not going to like because people are conservationists. We will do the amount as long as it's comfortable. I said, the energy grid, all these society would have to collapse for us to go back to a manual labor society for the majority of the population to be active on a regular basis because of the necessity of survival. That is no longer a thing. People will choose comfort and convenience over something that requires a lot of effort. So more than likely, the logical outcome is that it has to be something so devastating and jarring to change a society's behavior in a very quick amount of time.
Exactly. And what you said, conservationists, the human body and brain are designed to do as little work as possible.
That's right.
Right. And it will always do as little as it can possibly get away with doing. And to do more than that, you have to be conscious and intentional about it. You have to do it on purpose.
Right. Which is so difficult. Right. Fighting this large mechanism for that. And so I always wonder what, my observation of things, I'm like, how are we going to get this under control? I'm like,
I don't think we will.
I don't think it's going to happen unless there's an intervention that is a large disaster, which I know sounds very foreboding and disastrous. It's just the reality of what it is to be human. And if you're talking about changing on a large scale, like super large.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got all these people in the world. They're just not going to magically start doing better. Just out of nowhere.
No, they're not. They got to get hit upside the head. And this is, I tell people in my audience, humans are hard-headed, right? How many times have you had to tell somebody, the same thing more than once before they actually got the point, right? Yeah. You don't hear something one time and go do it. Most people ain't like that. Right? That's true. When you were in kindergarten, how many times did you sing the ABCs? Right? A million, right? And yeah. You know the song right now. You think about
That's
it, you
exactly
know the
whole
thing,
right. Yeah. Right?
And the good news is we all know how to read and talk, right? Because yeah. We did it so many times, but that's how human beings are. We're hard-headed.
Most definitely. So as we kind of end up here, the last part here, I would love some great tips or tidbits on how to work on your game, some big, large picture things to work on your game that people can take away and try to start working on, hopefully slowly and methodically and getting better.
Sure. So I'll tell people about what we call a roadmap in reverse. So reverse roadmap is really just thinking about your goals. And you got to have a goal. All right? If you're going to have a reason to get out of bed every day, you need a goal. So what is a worthy ideal that you're pursuing, like as Earl Nightingale said in The Strange Secret? And when you're clear on what you want to achieve, all you got to do is keep asking yourself the question, what would need to be true? So if I want to achieve this goal, what would need to be true? All right. So let's say you're in fitness. So let's say somebody wants to lose 30 pounds. Okay. What would need to be true for me to lose 30 pounds? That means I'm probably going to need to stop eating this candy. I probably got to stop. I got to start working out every day. I got to stop watching those 7 hours of TV. I got to say whatever other bad habits they have, they know what they are. Okay. In order for me to do those things, what would need to be true? Okay, let me erase the GoPuff app off my phone. All right, let me unsubscribe from Amazon. Right. Let me whatever the bad habits are. Let me stop buying cigarettes or whatever it is. Sure. Well, I got to stop doing these things. What would need to be true in order for me to do that? What would need to be true? And you keep asking yourself that question until you basically work yourself backwards from the goal to where you are today, and then you execute in the opposite direction. And usually those steps, again, they sound simple to talk about, but they're not so easy to execute on, because if they were easy, then again, as they say, everybody would be doing it.
Right.
So this is where you enlist help. This is where you go hire a trainer. All right. This is where you go get a coach. This is why you join a mastermind program. This is why you get into you go sign up for a course. This is why you buy a ticket to go to an event, because you will meet other people who can help you do the thing that you know you need to do. But for whatever reason, you're either not doing it or you are not capable of doing it. So you got to get with other people and utilize their brains and their muscles to help you achieve something that you've been unable to achieve on your own. So one of the things I tell people in my audience all the time, Darian, I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, is that many people need to learn when to fire themselves from a job.
Mm.
And the problem for a lot of people, because if you had a staff member working for you and they kept dropping the ball on the same task, how many times are you gonna let them do it before you fire them?
Right.
All right, you just got to go. You can't do the job. And sometimes we all look ourselves in the mirror and realize we're that person. Okay, yeah. I'm failing at getting myself in shape. I'm fired. Let me go hire a trainer so I can actually get it done. And you got to know when to fire yourself from a job. And also you got to know which jobs to put yourself on, which jobs to take yourself off. And that requires a certain level of self-accountability.
Man, I got to tell you, Dre, you got this. You got this down. You are seasoned at this. You are incredible at this. I feel a lot of synergy between our thought process with this. This Excellent. Is awesome information. I'm so grateful you reached out, and you've just been nothing but professional, thoughtful, kind, caring, but direct also, which is very difficult to do, to do all those things and wrap it into one. So I'm grateful for our connection, and just thank you so much.
Well, I'm grateful for you sharing your platform, Darian. I hope to want to hear the feedback from your audience once they get to hear this conversation. Yeah, so I appreciate you sharing your platform and letting me speak here.
Yeah, most definitely. And I'd love for you to just let people know how they could connect more with you and work on your game and just learn more from you.
Sure. So I'm on all the social media platforms. I'm probably most active on Instagram. My Instagram is just my name, at Dre Baldwin. I'm on everything else. So whatever app, whichever platform you like the most, is look my name up. I'm easy to find. I publish everywhere every day. What else? Work on Your Game University. That's the place where we do all of our stuff. So if you just go to workonyourgameuniversity.com, you can learn more about what we do. But on social apps, you'll find out about it as well. People can get a free copy of my book, Third Day. Can I share that?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, so if you just go to thirddaybook.com, this book is all about how you show up and give your best effort when you least feel like it. So it's all spelled out, thirddaybook.com. The Decision That Separates the Pros from the Amateurs. Again, just cover the shipping. We'll ship you a free copy of the paperback. thirddaybook.com. But other than that, just look me up, whatever platform you like. I'm very easy to find. Everything's public.
Most definitely. Dre, thank you so much. I appreciate you, man. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, Darian. I appreciate you.